have like millions, right? Like,
that's your oeuvre.
But I'm going to say Just Like Heaven. I first heard that song when my friend, who was also my crush, basically my first love, even though we were never actually dating, but he made a mixtape for me and it had that song on it. And that kind of just sealed the deal on that.
We have to bring that back. Burning a CD for your crush.
This was even like a cassette.
Come on, guys.
It was very romantic. I still have it. He made like a cover for it.
Yes.
Photocopied like picture of him.
You know. I love a picture of him.
If you could spend a moment with some remarkable people and discover what their life sounds like, what would you ask? Welcome to Are We On Air? An audio encounter. I'm Armand Nafei, and each episode will feature one conversation with an inspiring friend of mine who will share with us the soundtrack to their life. Hello, beautiful people, and greetings from sunny, I cannot believe it's November, Los Angeles, California. This week's guest and I met during the pandemic on Instagram. I don't know how, but this beautiful Elliot Smith cover with this hauntingly beautiful, melancholic, yet familiar voice caught my ear. And I had to find out who it is. And it turned out it's Ruth Radlett, former frontwoman of the super cool indie electro band of the 2000s, The Chromatics. It had turned out that The Chromatics had just split up and Ruth started her solo career. And the song Twilight just followed me throughout my first winter back in Los Angeles. It was rainy and cold, but this song just carried me through. Fast forward a year or two later, where Ruth and I got together on the balcony at the penthouse at the Chateau, overlooking sunny Los Angeles, where we covered everything from her journey, her musical choices, her time performing the Chanel show for Carl, all the way to her current solo career. What a beautiful, talented songwriter and singer, and hopefully more to come. Much love, and I'll speak to you soon.
Well, let's start with a chin chin, darling.
Sounds good. Thank you for the wine.
Yeah. Welcome to Are We On Air, Ruth Radlett. I would call you en français, c'est Radlett, but it's Radlett. Radlett in English.
No, please do not say the T. You're not supposed to pronounce that. I think you said it correctly. It is a French.
There you go.
French name. French Belgian, in fact.
Uh huh. Who is Belgian? Who is French or Fro?
It's my dad's side. His grandfather came over to Ellis Island on a ship in like 1905 from Antwerp. Like, he was born not in Antwerp, but near there. Some of the history is mysterious, but it's pretty cool. So I like to claim that Belgian bit.
Have you been to Antwerp?
I have. I love to think about him walking those streets.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
It was kind of moving, like more than I thought. But, you know, he was my great grandfather. I never got to meet him or anything. But,
yeah.
You know, we were just talking about photography off the air.
Yeah. Now on the air.
Now we're on the air. It turns out he was into photography and I had no idea until a couple years ago, and just came across some old family photos and he had taken some really beautiful pictures like up in the wilderness in Alaska because he lived up there. Long story, but.
So basically from Belgium via Ellis Island to Alaska.
Yeah,
he really had the urge to go west. So.
Yeah, I'm not totally clear on why. They were living a rugged life out there, but. Yeah, he took these beautiful scenic photos. And this is, you know, 1915 or something. You had to be pretty passionate to be a photographer at that point because it wasn't very accessible. So anyway, just had to mention that.
Nice. Well, talking about passion, we're passionate about music, like yourself. And you obviously are in music. You're a beautiful, wonderful singer and musician.
Thank you.
Artista. Yeah, I mean, this is how our passion for music kind of led us here to this little interview series. We've been trying to have this conversation for a while. We met, I guess, during the pandemic in a way, right?
Yeah,
through social media.
It felt like a big deal to be out in a restaurant at that time.
Yeah.
Inside.
Yeah. And obviously, I was a huge fan of The Chromatics, which you were the lead singer of. Now you went solo. And
yes.
And your first track, that was a cover of
Elliot Smith,
which I just listened to. And it just resonated with me right away.
I'm so glad to hear that.
Yeah, it just hit me. It was also like a period where I was just coming back from Europe, to back to LA, you know, the first time after like 2 years. It was, you know, how this January is in LA, very rainy and dark and moody. And that song was like the perfect, it was like end of Christmas, New Year's kind of period. And it was just like the perfect soundtrack. And I just fell in love with the whole, everything, the sound, the song, you. And I'm like, oh my God, I need to speak to you.
It came out in December. And I think that was the perfect time of year to release it. I was living in Portland at the time, which is my hometown. You can just imagine what the weather was like there, like even rainier and gloomier. But it felt so right for that. Yeah. You know, it was the appropriate mood.
Haven't laughed this hard in a long time. Better stop now before I start crying. Go off to sleep in the sunshine. I don't want to see the day when it's dying. She's a sight to see, sight to see. She's a good to me, good to me. But I'm already somebody's baby. She's a pretty thing, pretty thing. And she knows everything, everything. But I'm already somebody's baby.
And how did that come along, also choosing an Elliott Smith's song? Obviously, there was a transitional period in your life, private and professional. A, what made you choose him, or did it find you? And also, yeah, tell me that trajectory.
Yeah, I think it was a little bit of both. I've always been a fan of his, and I liked that song a lot in particular. I think I had the idea to cover it, you know, in the mid-2000s at some point.
Oh, wow.
Just kind of kept that on the back burner. But I know that's when it first crossed my mind. And then a friend of mine, Logan Lynn, who is an artist on Killer Rock Stars, kind of put this together for me. I actually didn't realize that he was the one that reached out to them and said, hey, what would you think of having Ruth on this comp? Because they were doing a 30th anniversary compilation. So they reached out, and they were into the idea. And, you know, I was going through the Killer Rock Stars catalog. They have a million great things to choose from, a lot of legendary artists. But that was my first thought. And it kind of just remained, even after I looked through, you know, hundreds of songs. I was like, you know, first thought, best thought, this is like what I want to do. And, you know, I'd like to pay tribute to Elliott. And he's kind of important, not only in LA, but in the Northwest. Mm. You know, he was pretty big deal in Portland, where I'm from. So
yeah,
I wanted to represent for that, too.
Yeah, it's that gloomy sound of that area, right? Which I think also your environment kind of has a big input basically into the arts, right? Where you're surrounded
Completely.
By. So
yeah, just listening to his music, even now, it just sort of transports me back into the 90s and,
yes.
you know, being an angsty teenager in the rain and all that, you know.
I love it. But before we talk about today, let's talk about where it all started with what's your earliest significant musical memory that shaped you as an artist?
You know, these are really hard-hitting questions.
Yeah, I hear it all the time.
Let me take a sip of wine and then I'll answer.
Thank you for that.
It's hard, you know, because your earliest memories are pretty fuzzy. So it's an interesting project to try to define that, you know, what was the earliest memory?
Was the significant for you.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, I think it was just my parents being musical. My dad always played the guitar, acoustic guitar.
Oh, sorry. We have some Harley Davidson driving, cruising down Sunset Boulevard.
We're here.
I forgot where we are. We're sitting on the patio at the penthouse at the Chateau Marmont here in Hollywood.
Yes, in case you forgot.
And it's a beautiful late afternoon, early evening. We're hopefully going to see a beautiful sunset. And I thought, what a fitting environment to interview.
It's lovely. I'm very happy to be here.
Yeah, my pleasure.
My parents were musical. My dad always played the guitar. My mom was a good singer. But actually, as I was thinking about this, about my earliest memory, I was kind of realizing that they never really sang and played together very much. We all did that a little bit together much later. But in the early days, I remember her singing or him playing, but not together. Tells you something about my childhood. But that would probably be the earliest memory. And then they didn't have a record collection or anything and didn't have much money. So I think all we really had as far as music was like a handful of cassette tapes and whatever was on the radio. Yeah. So like whatever cassette tapes were around got played a lot. And I think like a very important one was, well, there was a couple. My mom had a couple of Emmylou Harris tapes and we listened to those constantly. Mm. And I remember trying to sing some of those songs when I was, you know, 7, 8 years old. And that might have had something to do with first wanting to be a singer and just some kind of vague things of, you know, watching opera singers on TV and being like, wow, you know. But I had a few things. I was like, oh, I want to be a piano player. Oh, I want to play the flute. I want to be a stand-up comedian. None of those stuck. I wish the piano had stuck because now I play it and I'm not very good at it.
Same.
My dad had bought us, I have two half-sisters also, and he bought us as a birthday present, because we all have birthdays around the same time, like a Casio keyboard. And this must have been in like 1990 or something. So that was the first instrument that I tried to play. But we didn't have lessons or anything, so it was kind of a bust. It didn't go anywhere. And I remember my dad, he must have thought I was musically inclined, because he asked if I wanted to learn guitar. He offered to teach me, because he would play it all the time. And I was like, eh, no, no, not interested. And then like fast forward to 12 or 13, it was like, teach me the guitar. I want to know how to play. And then there was just no stopping me after that. I just fell in love with the guitar. And it was more about the guitar than it was about singing at that point, mm-hmm. you know? So, yeah, there was a few chapters.
Well, see how important it is what parents do to us or give us the opportunity as a child, right? Or just putting it in front of us, not even telling us what to do, just by watching and learning in a way,
right? It's true. My parents never, like, pressured me to follow a certain career path. But there was always creativity around. My mom was a great illustrator. My dad was a really talented artist. He was a sign painter by trade. He was always painting in the house and making sculptures out of wax. And, you know, it was just inspiring. And it made me and my sisters, my middle sister in particular, get really into drawing and painting. That was my first love was, oh, I want to be an artist.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I was pretty good at it, too, but you have to kind of pick one main thing. It sort of fell by the wayside, sadly. So when I try to draw now, people ask me if I can still draw, and I wouldn't really brag about that anymore.
Well, you don't have to draw over here. You can just talk about music. That's easy.
Yeah, it's much easier for me at this point.
Yeah. But before we go into your own music, how would you describe yourself with 3 tracks that describe who you are or your sound?
Yeah. See, this is the
hard, difficult one.
This is the hardest one because I knew this question was coming and I've been thinking about it. I mean, since we've tried to schedule this also for a while.
Yeah, we've been trying to schedule this interview for the past year, year and a half.
I still don't really have the answer. Mm-hmm. And I think it does change with time, you know, because it kind of has to do with what's inspiring you in any given moment. You know,
it could be a snapshot of the moment, right? Because I always say also on this pod that the soundtrack to our lives changes just the way our lives changes.
Like
what you listened to yesterday doesn't necessarily connect with you today, right?
Yeah.
But maybe it's just more of like a thing that had an impact in your life, you know, or
yeah,
a moment.
Well, that's kind of what I was mainly thinking about was just my early influences, which, you know, it's a lot of like classic songwriters. I think like Bob Dylan, Neil Young, or, you know, those people are still at the top for me. Joni Mitchell, you know, even people like Stevie Wonder. There's just so many incredible songwriters from that general era. And I don't know that anybody has done.
You got to give me 3 tracks.
Too much better. Okay.
You're going to play those tracks.
Well, let's start with Bob Dylan because I think he's kind of one of my, it's hard to pick a favorite of anything, but he's
give
at the top.
Give me the first thing that pops into your head.
So I'm going to say Tomorrow Is a Long Time because I love that song so much. And I have also played it a lot in my life on the guitar. I know all the words. I can play it without.
You played it live?
I've never played it
with
live.
With an audience? No,
just for fun.
For yourself.
On
okay.
the acoustic guitar. Yeah. But it's just such a beautiful song. And it's about love and longing. And that's kind of, those are some of my favorite subjects.
Great.
You know, it's melancholy in this way, but it's not dark. It's bittersweet. And I think that bittersweet feeling is my favorite. You know, those are the songs that always get me.
If today was not a crooked highway, if tonight was not a crooked trail, if tomorrow wasn't such a long time, then lonesome would mean nothing to you at all. Isn't only if my own true love was waiting, if I could hear her heart is softly pounding. Isn't only if she was lying by me, and I'd lie in my bed once again. I can't see my reflection in the water. I can't speak the sounds to show no pain. I can't hear the echo of my footsteps or remember the sounds of my own name. Isn't only if my own true love is waiting.
Another song I was thinking of is by Joni Mitchell. It's called Little Green. And it's a really heavy song. It's about her daughter that she gave up for adoption, which doesn't have anything to do with my life, but, you know, it's a gorgeous song. It's just very simple, her singing and playing guitar, and her voice is, you know, incredible. She's a brilliant writer, and it's something I aspire to. I don't think I could ever get there, but, you know, it's nice to hold on to that as a source of inspiration. But there's something in the song. It's you know, it's about this baby, but there's a tragedy, but there's also a hope there, because it's all about, like, what kind of life is this girl going to have? And it's sort of, you can almost turn it on yourself in a way, you know, like, what kind of person am I, and who am I going to be? And the first line is, born with a moon in Cancer, which I have a Cancer moon. So that makes me think of myself.
There you go.
Born with a moon in Cancer. Choose her a name she will answer to. Call her green, and the winters cannot fade her. Call her green for the children who've made her little green. Be a gypsy dancer. He went to California. He everything's warmer there. So you write him a letter and say, her eyes are blue. He sends you a poem and she's lost to you. Little green, he's a non-conformer. Just a little green, like the color when the spring is born. There'll be crocuses to bring to school tomorrow. Just a little green, like the nights when the northern lights perform. There'll be icicles and birthday clothes, and sometimes there'll be sore.
Yeah, not to sidetrack, but I'm reading a book right now, too, that's all about the Laurel Canyon scene in the 60s and 70s.
What's the book called?
It's called Hotel California.
Oh, right.
I don't know if you've read it.
No, but wasn't there a documentary on Netflix about
the Eagles? Book?
Yeah, no. I mean, Eagles, yes, but about the Laurel Canyon. Netflix? I don't know.
I think so, and I didn't see it, so I'm
wondering if that's the book adaption or the influence on that documentary, which, by the way, to all of you for listeners, I highly recommend that documentary about the Laurel Canyon and the sounds.
It was just like a couple years ago, right, that came out.
Like 2-3 years ago or something.
I don't know why I didn't watch that, because people ask me, and I don't know, I'm going about
and we're and around the corner from the Laurel Canyon here, right here.
There,
we can look
so
at it.
I was driving over here feeling all romantic about the era and thinking about all these stories, you know. Anyway.
I love it.
How many did I pick? I picked two.
Give me the third one.
The third one, I'll go off script and I'll pick something a little bit more contemporary. Mm-hmm. Since those are, you know, old songs, classic songs. I'm going to pick a Frank Ocean song because I love, love, love Frank Ocean.
We do on this pod. I think every second guest at some point mentions Frank Ocean. And of course, I'm trying to get him on the pod, which like is, he's like the enigma,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, good luck.
I mean, yeah, I know. Everyone's like, yeah, good luck. I'm like, yeah, one day. Frank, for the 50th time, if you hear this, every doubt, we want you here.
I'm going to Coachella.
Just to see him?
Pretty much just to see him. I mean, there's other people I want to see too, but like he's the main reason.
Yeah.
I saw him at FYF Fest in like, I want to say, I'm losing track of time. When was that? It was like 2017 maybe. And
it must have been the last FYF, right?
Yeah. And it was amazing.
Wow.
So anyway,
yeah.
I'm going to say Self Control because that's my favorite song on Blonde. Right. And that whole album was just like such a part of my life. It, like moving to LA, I think that came out in 2016. I just moved to LA for the first time in late 2015, and it was my first summer here. I forget what month it came out, but I remember just driving around and just listening to that. Even just the first listen is like still in my mind when I hear it. And I've listened to it millions of times, you know?
And the first impact it had on you.
Yeah. And it's just, it's all like mixed in with LA and just the feeling of that.
Now and then you miss it. Sounds make you cry. Some nights you dance with tears in your eyes. I came to visit, 'cause you see me like a UFO. That's like never, 'cause I made you use your self-control.
The modern, that's the contemporary Laura Canyon, right? That's what it is.
I'd
in
like
a way,
to
right?
think so, yeah. We need somebody to fill those shoes.
Exactly. Yeah, that album, I mean, Channel Orange, of course, groundbreaking, but I think Blonde really just took it to another level. I think also more on a cultural, multi-sensory level, like just the cover alone, shot by Wolfgang Tillmans, which again you saw now at the MoMA exhibition of Tillmans retrospective, and the way it came together. Also for our listeners, if you want to hear that story, listen to our Wolfgang Tillmans interview where he talks about the cover.
I don't think I've heard that one yet.
Oh, you gotta listen to
that one. I need to listen to that one. I love his work, so that's on my list.
But I think about Frank a lot, especially since we started doing these interviews, because he gets referenced on so many different levels from so many different people. And I'm trying to analyze, of course, we have a visceral experience, just the way you were driving, cruising around LA for the first time hearing it. But everyone has a different kind of experience with it for different kind of reasons. And I'm trying to analyze and understand what it is, which is hard to pinpoint.
I know, right? I think it kind of transcends in a way. It's like, it transcends like genres. I think it's just good songwriting.
Yeah.
I think that does transcend when it's good enough. It doesn't really matter. You know, maybe you're not into that kind of vibe, but you just can't help but know it's a good song. Yeah. You know?
But it's also like
his voice is beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it's emotional. I think it just grabs you in a way that's hard to deny. At least me.
There you go. Yeah, everyone feels something else in it. But something I felt for the first time when I heard you guys, when in your last band, your former band, The Chromatics.
Yes.
I told you that story over dinner the other night. It must have been 2008, 2009. I was in Berlin. It was like the first few weeks when the Amano Hotel opened, which back then was very cool in a way in Berlin, like a cool hotel with a cool cocktail bar. And I was there with a couple of friends drinking my delicious whiskey sour, looking at the photograph. I'll have that Frank Ocean moment you had, and you still have that memory. I had that with you guys.
I love that. I think that's one of the coolest things about music, in a sense, is like how you end up a part of people's lives.
You're capturing the moment. It's like it's like a photograph. That's why I remember I was drinking whiskey sour. I know exactly who was with me. Shout out to my friend Max and Justus and other who were with us. And looking at a photograph of this like animal, I don't know exactly what animal, and the DJ was playing a record, a vinyl record. This is in 2008-09.
Yeah.
And I just hear, deet, deet.
In the city.
And I'm like, oh, what is this? This is pre-Shazam, kids. So I walked up to DJ, which you shouldn't do.
Yeah, you're not supposed to, but
know,
how else are you going
to do it? I had to do it. And I went up to him and was like, what is this record? And it was?
In the City.
In the City by the Chromatics. So tell me, when did the Chromatics start? How did you get involved? Give us a nice little experiential moment. And what's your favorite Chromatics track?
Yeah, I will have to go way back in time.
Yes, we have time.
I'm going to age myself here because I recorded the first song with them. It was already a band, started by Adam Miller. Then Johnny Jewel joined the band, and then eventually I joined the band along with Adam's brother, Nat Walker. But yeah, it was just, it's a bit blurry because so much time has gone by, but they had this song and they wanted me to try singing it.
But that was the first thing you were singing?
I think it was In the City.
That was the first track, Jesus.
I hope I'm not wrong. Adam's gonna yell at me. I don't think I'm
wrong. No one is checking yet, don't worry.
No, I believe it was In the City, though. And yeah, this was like 2006, and the rest was history, as they say. I think it went great, and so I just kind of kept singing, and then I just became the singer. And Adam did a couple tracks. He did vocals on a couple tracks, but it was mostly me. And we got strangely lucky with just getting recognition kind of early. And that time that you're talking about, 2008, 2009, was a big era. That's when I went to Europe for the first time, 2008. That was really exciting to do a Europe tour. You know, I was 25, 26 years old. You know, I was like, I'd never crossed the ocean. But I will have to apologize to anyone who was at that first. Our very first show in Europe was in Berlin, and I know it was bad. And someone even told me they were disappointed after the show. And it just, I was so tired, and it just was not good. So, sorry, everyone in Berlin, if you were there. I think we've been back a couple times and hopefully redeemed ourselves.
Yeah. Listen, we always have those moments. I had that once. I was playing a gig during the World Cup in Moscow, in Russia, on stage in front of thousands of people, which was already nerve-wracking. And I had a little laptop malfunction. That's when I was DJing, so it was Serato. The laptop froze while I was getting on stage and they were announcing and everyone was looking at me. So I was like,
the step
reboot
of nightmares.
The laptop. Yeah, like from all these thousand people rebooting the laptop.
How long did that take?
Yeah, like usually it takes like what, a couple of seconds, 30 seconds? It felt like 2 hours.
I'm sure.
And the sound guy comes over. He's like, oh my God, yeah, you have to reboot. Do you have something on USB? And I'm like, no. Like, and I looked at my USB, a couple of tracks because I was playing in Tulum before. So basically completely not the sound that was relevant for that event.
It's like topical.
Very commercial World Cup in Moscow. And I'm like, fuck. So I'm playing the first track, kind of got away. Second, third, okay, by the time the reboot and loading up the program again, by the third track, I'll never forget that. You know, people were fine, but I'll never get that one guy in the audience. Your story just reminded me of
and
that.
And then it haunts you, right?
He was just like folded arms, looking at me. And he was like somewhere like in the crowd, not even front row, and just shaking his head. And I just died. I'm like, you know, of course, from all the people who had a good time, and this guy I see, and it just destroyed me. And I still think about him, whoever you were, I hate you.
Yeah, I guess there's always a guy like that in every city.
Why do we pick that singular person? I don't know. Anyway, going back to you, your favorite Chromatics track.
Oh, yeah.
Like, maybe playing or hearing, or maybe it was a moment that, just the way you had, like, the Frank Ocean moment on that, driving down the lane.
I might have to have a two-part answer because I think my favorite song to do live was Running Up That Hill, but that was not a song written by us.
Yeah, yeah.
So I can't claim that one.
Doesn't matter. You guys, I love that rendition. Was that on the Colette compilation? Which track was on the
Colette? Oh my gosh, why have I forgotten? It's been so long. I have that CD somewhere too. And I don't remember.
But that's another way I heard you guys was through the Colette compilation in Paris. And also you worked with Michel Gobert when he did the live show soundtrack for Chanel, which must have been 2011, 2012.
That was 2012. Yeah, that was terrifying and
Tell
amazing.
Me. You met Carl, you worked with Carl, you worked with Michel Gobert, who was also on the show, if you ever listened to the episode.
Oh, yeah. God, I'm behind on these episodes.
No,
I gotta listen to more.
Please.
He was great. It was like such a privilege to be there and wonderful to meet Carl.
Sure.
I feel very lucky for that. It was a very quick interaction. He told me I look like Coco Roche's sister, and I was highly flattered. And that was mostly the extent of it. I think he just said, nice to meet you, great show. You look like Coco Roche's sister.
And Coco must have walked the show that period still. It must have been that era.
I don't think so.
Really?
I don't think she was there, but, you know, it was 2012, so
yeah.
She was still, you know, modeling quite a bit. But yeah, it was just very surreal. I was so nervous. I don't think... Again, I have to apologize. Most people do. I don't think I did a very good job. It's tough being a singer because the nerves...
The attention is on you.
...go to your breath.
Yeah.
And the attention's on you. So it's double trouble. But double it was still trouble. Like an incredible experience. And they gave me... They dressed me. I still have my dress that I wore.
Shout out to Carl and to Chanel.
Yes.
Do you remember... Was it one track you played or was it like a little compilation?
We played like... I think it was like 20 minutes.
All right, yeah.
So a few songs, three or four songs. I couldn't even tell you what all they were at the time.
Don't worry, we're hearing it now.
Yeah, I was talking about my favorite song to play live, Running Up That Hill, probably. It was like, it could often be an emotional moment. That song, I felt like more connected to the audience probably than any other song. There was just something about it, and we usually close with it too, so it was just this kind of epic moment at the end of the show. And there was one show in particular, it was in Brussels, and I can't remember the venue, but it was like one of those kind of formal, like, sit-down venues, which always feels kind of odd. You know?
Because people just literally just stare at you and not even move.
I could be mixing things up, but maybe it wasn't that song, but I'm associating this moment with that song. I just remember beginning to play and everyone's standing up at once and coming forward. And it was, I almost like lost it. Like those kind of moments made me really, really emotional. And that might not have been that song, but I felt that while playing that song too, it kind of feeling like the tears come to my eyes, which is my favorite part about playing live is when you feel that emotion. You don't always. It's comes and goes.
Wow. She's getting teary-eyed right now.
It's, when you feel like you connect to the audience. It's,
hundreds or thousands of people moving like that towards you. That must have, that's like such a compliment in a way as well, right?
It was amazing. I don't know. It was a special moment.
And then from the Chromatics, I saw during the pandemic there was the split up of the official split up. We don't have to go into detail too much in that, but that kind of pushed you towards your solo career, which you are now entered the phase and produced new records and new tracks and released it, which I love them all.
Thank you.
And tell me about that period and how did it feel to, you just said, like, as Chanel being the front woman, and now you're basically by yourself completely. Yes, when you perform live, you have a band, but you are like, it's under Ruth now.
it's been a journey. It's alternately really exciting and really scary. You know, I'm 40, I'm reinventing myself completely. I think it's a great thing for me because I feel like I have the opportunity to be myself truly in a way that I never had before. So even though it's a little daunting, kind of starting over, quote unquote, it's also really inspiring. And I think I wouldn't have it any other way.
I mean, it's a beautiful thing. It's also, I wouldn't even call it reinventing, because it's just, I think the next phase is it's a development.
That's right? True. That's true. I'm not throwing anything out.
Yeah, you're not starting from scratch.
It's all part
you've
of
done
the
it.
Story.
You've toured mm-hmm. the world. You were headlining festivals.
And now look at me.
No, it's fantastic. I love your solo material. It's completely different, because before Chromatics was very electronic infused, and also I think again the sound reflected that zeitgeist. I mean, it started in the early mid 2000s.
Yeah,
you know, that period was very, I mean, you guys were part of that wonderful compilation with other artists we talked about the other day. What was it called?
After Dark.
After Dark, which I love. That was one and two or something. Fantastic compilation.
The first one is kind of what really put us on the map. Uh-huh. And that was one of those kind of random strokes of luck where that kind of took off unexpectedly. Yeah.
With other fantastic artists, what the name? Oh, you were talking about the other night.
Definitely Glass Candy.
Glass Candy.
That was, you know, another great band from that era.
Favorite track from Glass Candy? What shall we play?
Mm, that's a hard one. I'm gonna say Warm in the Winter.
Warm in the Winter it is.
But I'm notoriously bad at picking favorites.
No, it's the first thing that comes to your mind. I put you on the spot. About your solo stuff, because now it's more singer-songwriter. It's going back to, we mentioned Elliott Smith and, you know, the sound of that region, and that's your background as well. So I think you're going more back to your roots now, and also being the solo artist, singer-songwriter, a bit more melancholic sounds.
Yeah.
Which I think you do so well, because your vocals, your sound within that electronic setup worked so well, but it works completely in a different way as a solo artist as well. You know, it's interesting how that works. But
I guess I'm a shapeshifter. Yeah, I think it is getting back to my roots. The main difference is I wasn't the main songwriter in the band. So, of course, the songs are going to be very different, because now they're all songs written by me. And it just has a different flavor, I think, because I'm so influenced by some of those early, you know, folk and even country artists. Like, there kind of has that, it just has that classic sound, and I'm not even doing that intentionally. It just comes out that way. When I write, I don't think too hard about what I want it to sound like. You know, maybe later in the production process, we'll talk about references and things like that, but I just let it come out. So I guess, yeah, that's...
Which track shall we play from your solo stuff? What's your fondest track right now? I know you're recording an album right now, right? Is that true?
I'm writing an album.
You're writing
an
album.
Not quite recording it yet, but I'm on the brink of starting. Yes. So that's also an exciting and a little scary new chapter. For the EP that I released last year, I had all the songs already. And I have a bunch of songs, but, you know, you want to write new stuff. You don't want to just, you don't want it to feel too old. So it's a new experience to write for a record directly.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm into it. You know, it's a good challenge. Favorite track is probably not the most popular one. It's a song called Youth, and it's super spare, just piano and cello. And it's really emotional. And I think that's my favorite one. You know, it's the most subtle, but I had such a great experience also in the studio recording that, and that's, yeah, let's play that one.
We shall. Live shows.
Yes.
I think you're going on a mini tour-esque Australia soon. Hopefully, maybe we can make something happen in Europe with Are We On Air.
I'd love
to have you.
I can't wait to get back to Europe.
Yeah.
Yes, I have some shows coming up. I'm going to Australia for Rising in Melbourne, which is a very cool festival I've never been to, but I'm excited to play there. And I'm thrilled that they wanted to bring me all the way over there. I haven't been to Australia in 10 plus years. I'm hoping to add more shows other than just Melbourne, but it's TBD on that, so unfortunately I can't say at this moment if there's more. And then I'll be playing in LA at Zebulon, but yeah, things are starting to happen. I'm working on something in New York possibly in the summertime, and you know, it's exciting to get back out there and, you know, travel again after the pandemic time where everything kind of ground to a halt.
Back on the road again.
Can't wait. That's my happy place, even though it's also really stressful. I just, you know, I'm a restless soul. I like to be out there moving around.
Yeah, telling me.
You know, we're cut from the same cloth in that way.
Gypsies. Mm-hmm. Gypsets. What's your go-to falling in love or heartbreak song?
Right. See, this is the one where I have like millions, right? Like,
That's your life.
This is my area. So there's almost too many. And for me, like, it really depends on the time, too. It's usually very linked with what I'm listening to at that moment. Or if you break up and maybe you had a song that you used to love listening to and thinking of that person, then it just hurts so bad. But those are all, like, kind of, those are changing all the time, you know? I will say, this is, like, so cliche, but I'm going to say Just Like Heaven. Because that, it just always puts me back in that place.
The Cure.
Yeah. I first heard that song when my friend, who was also my crush and basically my first love, even though we were never actually dating, but he made a mixtape for me, you know, when I was a teenager.
And, we talked about that the other day.
And it had that song on it. And that kind of like just, you know, sealed the deal on that.
We have to bring that back. The
mixtapes.
The mixtapes. The burning a CD for your crush, you know? I mean,
this was even a cassette.
Cassette. Come on, guys.
It was very
girls,
romantic. I still have it.
Yeah, the playlist, the streaming service, kind of in a way. I wouldn't kill it. I'm sure people still. I still turn on playlists as well.
Yeah, but it's takes some of the magic out of it. There's no like.
Something tangible having a cassette or a CD.
Yeah, he made like a cover for it. Yeah, a photocopy, like picture of him.
I love a picture of him. Love it.
Yeah, so I'll say that. on a totally different... Can I say more than one?
Yes. That's your area. You know, now go crazy.
Okay. I know. There's so many. One song that I absolutely love, which actually I think my dad played for me for the first time, like a lot of years ago. And I've heard this song many times. Many people have done it. It's on my mind a lot the last couple of years because I lost my dad 2 years ago. And I've been, you know, thinking a lot about the music that he liked. And
what did he like?
I can only listen to it a little bit here and there.
Yeah.
He was very picky. He really liked songs, but he might not want to listen to like a whole album mm-hmm. from an artist. But he was like, he had great taste in like country and classic rock and, you know, but he had some things you wouldn't expect either, like the song I'm about to tell you about, which is a Tony Bennett song. Mm. It's a standard. I've been listening to a lot of jazz standards recently, which is, I love those songs. And it's inspiring as a singer.
Why is it inspiring as a singer?
I think because the songs are so well written and the singers that were performing them usually, you know, especially back in the day, they're just so good.
Mm.
And they don't have any tricks. They don't have any like pitch correction. They don't have anything. They just sound perfect. And I've been really into Tony Bennett.
Yes.
For that reason, because he's just, you know, he's not a songwriter, but he, as a performer, he's just incredible. So his version of Fly Me to the Moon, I think, is like one of the greatest love songs in the world. You know, I think I would like play that at my wedding or something. It's just gorgeous. I can hardly hear it without crying, especially because my dad loved it. So it's extra emotional. So I'll add that on a more epic note and less teenage love.
Yeah. I love it. I totally support this.
Fly. And let me play among the stars. Let me see what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars.
Well, after the teenage love, or during the teenage love, when you're out and about and you're feeling super sexy, what's the sexiest song?
Super sexy. I don't know about feeling sexy. I feel like it's got to be, it's always like hip hop or R&B if I'm really in that vibe. Honestly, like, yeah, it's probably going to be like a hip hop song. It's going to be like Biggie, like Hypnotized. As soon as you hear that beat, you're just like, you just feel fucking ready for anything, you know?
Yeah.
And you want to like get out on the floor, you feel confident, you feel sexy, you know? It's just, yeah, it's a great song.
I love it.
Sicker than your average, pop a twist, cabbage off instinct. Niggas don't think shit, stink pink gators. My Detroit players, Tim's for my hooligans in Brooklyn. Dead right, if the head right, Biggie there, air night. Papa been school since days of under rules. Never lose, never choose to. Bruce Cruz who? Do something to us, talk go through us. Girls want to us, wanna do us, screw us, who us? Yeah, Papa and Pop. Close like Starsky and Hutch, stick to clutch. Yeah, I squeeze three at your chair. Every M3 bang every MC easily.
Take that.
Easily. Recently, niggas frontin' ain't saying nothing, so I just speak my peace. Keep my peace. Cubans with the Jesus peace. With my peace.
Well, to wrap up a little chat, if your life would be a movie, what song would play in the end credits?
This is a very high pressure one as well.
I'm just putting the pressure on.
But this one I thought about and I actually have a good answer.
Oh, wow.
Which I feel like...
I had great answers all evening.
If anyone makes a movie about me, please use this song. I'm going to say, I think it's Prelude in E minor. It's just one of the most beautiful pieces of music I've ever heard, I think. And it's, I mean, anyone that's heard it knows it's just extremely moving, and apparently he requested that it be played at his own funeral, which it was.
Yes,
and it's kind of incredible. I can't imagine really a better song to play at your funeral. Yeah, I think it's in a lot of movies too, but I remember in particular. Have you seen that movie Five Easy Pieces with Jack Nicholson?
No.
Karen Black?
No.
It's like from the 70s. It's,
gotta
it's,
watch it.
It's an amazing movie. It's actually like really heavy. It's kind of fucked up, but it's a really good movie. But there's a moment where Jack Nicholson sits down at the piano and starts playing that. And it just gets me every time.
I'm going to play that sequence. I love it. Well, Ruth, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much for being on air with us.
Thank you.
Finally, we made
it.
Yes,
I'm glad we did it.
High five. Boom.
My hand is very cold. Sorry. No, the sun has gone
nippy,
down.
Yeah, here. It's getting nippy. But I wish you all the best, especially as a solo artist.
Thank you so much. I'm excited for the next chapter.
Yeah.
Lots of new music to come.
Lots of music to come. Hopefully we're going to see you perform live somewhere.
Yes.
Hopefully maybe we can arrange something with Awe and Ed, our kiosk. But
I'm
we're going to hear
it.
And
I'm
see
ready.
More of you.
I'm ready.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Armand.
Thank you for tuning in this week. If you want to listen to the full playlist, visit aureonair.com or our Spotify channel. You can also find us on Instagram and on YouTube at aureonair. And a big thank you to my wonderful team at Studio Noi. I'm Armand Nafei, and I'll speak to you soon.